Now bring your fingertips together. Bring the heels of your hands together. Just leave a little space in between your palms with that ball of energy focused in there. And hold it about heart level. And feel like there's a river of gold energy running up your spine. And it represents every moment of aspiration you've ever had. Every time you've ever wished to be free of suffering for yourself or anyone else. Every time you've seen something very beautiful, a sunset or sunrise or a new baby. Every time you got something you liked and you wanted to share that joy. Every time you didn't get something you liked and you realized it didn't matter. All the moments of aspiration, just feel the energy of them moving up your spine. Above your head, there's a beautiful gold light. You stay with the feeling of your hands and your heart, but you're aware of that gold energy of aspiration moving up and the gold light above your head. And you make a statement of your aspiration. I do it with a Buddhist formula. You can do it however you wish. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Sadhu. So tonight we are supposed to be discovering all about this lovely topic called discrimination. I think it took me a long time. I was somewhere in my 30s, well into my 30s, before it began to dawn on me that what I often thought of discrimination was actually judgment. Any of you have any of that happen in your lives? Once or twice, maybe, just thinking you were discriminating only to find out you were judging? Huh? Because there's quite a difference, but not much difference, huh? Did you notice? Discrimination is aware of the sound of that child. Judgment is thinking that it will interfere with your pleasure. Right? Do you see that? Discrimination is hearing the sound of the traffic. Judgment is feeling like the air is bad or something is wrong with it or it's really good or it's wonderful. Do you understand the difference? It's a very fine line, isn't it? When you cross that line, that's how you start getting unhappy. A whole lot of unhappiness is due just simply and precisely because of misuse of discrimination. In Buddhism, the Buddha said, trying for a sensual, that's all of the senses, a sensual experience other than that which is present is suffering. So that pretty well sums it up, wouldn't you say? Because no matter how you might try for some other sensual experience, what is occurring is what is occurring. The only real input you have any power over is your reaction to what is occurring. Do you see that that is true? Now tell me something, if you are unhappy and something occurs that triggers your emotional state, does it make you happy to yell? Huh? Does anybody disagree? Do some people feel a lot better when they go hunga munga at somebody? Why? Seeing all those bodies scattered over the landscape. All that broken glass. and nobody well enough to sweep it up except you. It's high damage peace, isn't it? High damage peace. And also, you know, running around and keeping everybody satisfied all the time. That is to say, allowing yourself to be manipulated by other people's wants isn't satisfying either, is it? Is it? Why? Yeah, you get exhausted. People love it. Oh, geez, that's great. Could you just move the cushion a little bit? Oh, that's wonderful. The footstool. I mean, how about the footstool? Oh, fantastic. Oh, I'm so comfortable. Oh, I forgot my coffee. Could you... Oh, the magazine. Could you turn the page? It never ends, does it? So it doesn't work if you yell and scream. It doesn't work if you run around trying to make everybody happy. So what does that leave? What about having equal rights? People are allowed to want whatever they want, and so are you. What about looking at the difference between being able to discriminate, oh yes, you want that, I want this, and then not going that one more step and making a judgment. Therefore, if you really love me, ooh, yucky, yucky. Ooh, stickums. Ooh, talk about tar babies. You know the story about the tar baby that you hit? And then you can't get yours, so you hit it with you. Inextricably linked. And what a mess. You see, the real position of discrimination is that there's no position. There can be absolute discrimination without having a position. Do you understand what I mean? You can hear that car go by and hear it absolutely clearly and establish no subject-object with it. Oh, I like that car. I dislike that car. Those things may happen, but you don't cling to it. You just watch it and let it go. What I'm trying to tell you is that you will survive your preferences if you don't cater to them. Furthermore, you'll learn a great deal of wisdom. That isn't to say that you can't cater to your preferences. It is to say that you don't have. Now, this is really difficult to accept, I know, because we have this wonderful kind of free market mentality on the planet wherever there's a good economy. You know, where there isn't a good economy, we just send the waste products from the free market economy, right? So we won't talk about that. That'll be some other class. Third world countries are really good for our garbage. We all know that, don't we? But those of us who live in these, what are they called, first world countries, would you say? Or second world? It's funny. Isn't it a funny expression? How many worlds? One, two, three. One. The countries that have the ability to afford a certain McDonald's lifestyle also, it seems that you're supposed to be happy, doesn't it? But it seems that you're not supposed to be happy, you're supposed to work to be happy. Do you get that idea? Like, how's your smile? Could you do that in public without stains on your teeth? How's your breath? Hi. And like, how many kinds of deodorant have you used today? Did you chew gum after you ate so you wouldn't be, you know, offensive? How much of what you're wearing did you have to put yourself through for to wear? How many rights do you have about what your hair looks like, what kind of shoes you're wearing, how often you have to spend money on what? How much money do you have to put into unnecessary maintenance because you're lacking discrimination, you're caught in judgment of self? That to be reasonable, I have to be a certain thing. Any of you who work in an office are subject to a certain amount of pressure on this, aren't you? Don't you think so? In the workplace, there's a lot of pressure. Well, of course there is. That's the marketplace. That's you get the salary, so you keep working. So if you're going to start to discriminate, expect waves. If you're going to start to want to use your life without trying to maintain a position which is not real, expect that a lot of people around you may not be happy. You should understand that if you really are going to be discriminating, not judgmental, you're going to cause a revolution. You will not be popular. You will ask questions at difficult times. It's not easy to discriminate. It's hard because a lot of people won't want you to. That's if you're going to discriminate and be generous with your discrimination. Of course, if you're just going to practice discrimination, we all do that all the time. If you're going to watch the discriminating mind, then that's different. The discriminating mind is the mind that can see cause and effect. That's all. It's just that simple. It can see cause and effect. And it doesn't place a right or a wrong on it. Now, in Buddhism, there's this lovely teaching. It goes like this. Nothing arises without cause. So for the discriminating mind, there are no mistakes. There are only many different types of cause. That's a curious one. There is no one that's more right than me. Here's an example of the discriminating mind. Presume that we're all sitting in a circle. Presume that we're all at the same level, all sitting on a chair in a circle. Presume that in the center of this circle is this humongous, humongous, extremely large bouquet of flowers. Huge, okay? Filled with all different kinds of flowers. You got that in your mind's eye? And every one of us are sitting in a chair all around this, and without moving your head or your eye position, every one of us is going to count how many flowers we see. Are we all going to come up with the same number of flowers, Vacuum Land? Huh?
No.
No. Who's right? Who else? Yeah? Who else? Huh? Everybody? Given what? Given the position. Right? Given the point of view, everyone is right. That is to say, understanding the cause, where someone is sitting, we're all right. It's very clear, isn't it, when it comes to counting flowers? It's just when you get to politics, religion, and taxes that there's a little problem. Or maybe on occasion relationships and love affairs or children or jobs or what you should wear or, you know, what color car or whether who dropped the dirty socks where, you know. But when you look at it just logically, you can see that we're all right, right? Can't you? I want more reassurance than that. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm feeling a little fluish today. I need that. Sure. And aren't you relatively existent? Isn't you relative? Dependent on circumstances, a different you arises. That's really important to know, though. Because then you have to understand that whether or not you like another person's point of view or you share their point of view, they have cause for that point of view. It may not be a point of view that you wish to adopt. It may not be a point of view that you particularly admire. They may be somebody who makes cups like this. Somebody who drinks out of cups. But if you really are going to be honest about it, when you are absolutely adamant about your right, your point of view, if you look into that, there's a great big fear behind it. Do you believe me? It's true. And whenever there is fear, there is judgment. I'm asking. I wonder, in my experience, it is true. In my experience, I believe something because I want it to be true. I believe it so much that I will actually get upset with someone who doesn't believe it or someone who believes differently. How I get upset is I feel hurt. I don't go proselytizing anymore. But that's how I do it. I get hurt. And then I'm misunderstood. You understand? I got this real good quiver. And I don't say anything. I'm very brave. But I doubt. I think that because they disagree with me, that I'm misunderstood. Or I'm, you know, that it's wrong for me to be speaking or something like that. Do you understand? So that's the fear behind it. And people that I have worked with, I noticed that they also very often have a fear behind a very strong belief system. Have you found that in yourself or are you different? So far, it seems to be very often true. Is that all right? So what? What does that mean? It's subjective.
It is personal, but what's true for somebody isn't true for anyone else necessarily.
I don't understand you. That's exactly right. I thought that's what I said. I said there's a whole bunch of flowers and we all count them. And we come up with a different count. Who's right? We're all right. Because whatever our count is, has cause. It is dependent on our point of view and how many flowers are on that side of the vase and so forth. Right?
Is there one universal right?
Now that is a really beautiful question. And I'd like to talk about that, but first I'd like to talk more about discrimination, because discrimination is what allows you to count your flowers and then make the statement about that. Why people start thinking that if somebody else has a different count than them, that one of the two people has to be wrong, is what I'm addressing right now. So I'm saying one of the main, okay, I'll say it differently. One of the main reasons why, if you hear a different count of flowers than you got, and you get angry, is because of fear. Because you're afraid that they're going to overrule you, or you're afraid that, you know, they're going to mislead everybody, or, right? Somehow or other, it makes you crazy or wrong. Is that clear? Would you agree with that? Me too. We must be counting from the same point of view. Because there are some things that can be counted from the same point of view. Do you think that's true? I'm standing up because I can see all of you better. Is that okay? So I can see who's eating popcorn in the back seat. Johnny? Okay. Now, the interesting thing about the process of discrimination is it is highly colored by every time you have been involved with judgment in the past. Do you see that what I'm saying when I say that? Like, for example, if you're counting only yellow flowers, and you suddenly, for some reason, say when your mother was in her seventh month of pregnancy, a giant yellow Volkswagen terrified her. And she said, "Ah, yellow!" And the muted sounds came through the womb, and you experienced this rush of fear along with the word yellow. Is that safe enough as an example? I can use that.
What have you got against Volkswagen?
Do you want a cup? Damned if you do and damned if you don't. Then, whenever you look at the yellow flower, there'll be a kind of a sense of maybe, let's say there's a kind of a sense of not wanting to count them, so the ones at the edge, you'll sort of skim by. Do you agree? Have you seen yourself do that? When there's something you don't like, you just sort of, it doesn't exist. This does not exist, and then I am. Hi there, hi there. This does not exist. Hi there, hi there. Then, because when there is an overwhelming experience that you can't handle, the consciousness can't handle, basically you just swoon out. You just blank out. So then that is a position that's like self-obliteration. I am not here. You see, that is like a judgment. That's like a position. And you're caught in that. Then you interpret the world according to those judgments. And because those yellow flowers are there, you're going to be working with improper evidence. You yourself are only going to get a certain amount of the material of the world around you. When people are deeply traumatized, they blank out. There are quite a few people from Vietnam in Los Angeles. They've been in Los Angeles for about 3 years and then they started going deaf and blind. There's nothing wrong with their ears. There's nothing wrong with their eyes. They just can't tolerate it anymore. They cannot tolerate seeing and hearing something that is so foreign from what they loved and has been destroyed. So they go blind, they go deaf. That's a very great suffering, isn't it? We all do it in less dramatic ways. Did you know that? We all swoon out a little bit here and there, don't we? Just kind of, holiday, back again. Thanks for dropping in. Whoops. And the real pain of that judgment versus discrimination. The person is discriminating that they can't stand anymore. You understand that? And they can't, and so they cut off. The real pain of that is the lack of being able to love anymore. If you cut down the pain, you also cut down the joy. That's what the real loss is. The loss of being able to be in this life in a way of love. Every time you have to outvote someone else because your view is threatened, every time you have to trade discrimination for judgment, you are caught in a non-love situation. You are unhappy. You are unhappy. Forget them. You are caught in suffering. The greatest gift you have is discrimination because it doesn't judge. But as soon as you start putting stuff on it, you're caught.
But don't you put stuff on it immediately? For example, I feel the energy in one room or space very, very nice for me. So I choose to go there.
And then when you're in a good mood, choose to go in an energy or space that you don't feel good energy from.
So when I feel the influence of it, what it does to me, and I feel that something in my body really doesn't want that.
So be curious, what part of your body really doesn't want it? Why doesn't it want it? See, you have rights. You're not just a puppet.
Yeah.
You know, you have rights. You don't have to have everything womb temperature all the time.
Okay.
You know? Like, you know, it's possible. It's possible to have little moments of discomfort and survive. And then increase the dose. You're laughing, but you know how much you fight for womb temperature, don't you? You know, somebody moves a piece of furniture in your house. Who moved that? Huh? We're quite nasty about it, really, aren't we? You really fight for womb temperature. But it is no favor to you because it's not freedom. You don't have the right to be comfortable. You may have the blessing, but you don't have the right. Look at this. Watch this. Did you see that? That's incredible. I just took a step. Watch. That's amazing. That's not my right. That's cherry on the cheesecake, folks. That's pure blessing. Look at that. I breathed in and didn't die. Wow. And you're going to argue about whether something doesn't feel right? What about that you can feel? like sometimes test it a bit. I told you on the weekend, I'll say it again, in Buddhism, the peacock is considered to be the emblem of compassion. Why? Because it can eat berries that are poisonous to other birds. And you know what happens to it? Its colors get brighter. Now, for a long time, for many years, even after I began to realize that discrimination and judgment were slightly different, I still clung desperately to the difference between sensitivity and awareness. I really thought that sensitivity was awareness. But it's not. It's sensitivity. You know? Oh, I'm very sensitive. I could be extremely sensitive. Oh, somebody walked in the room in a bad mood. But if you ask me, you know, what was 2 feet behind me? What? It's like a lamp, eh? But I'm sensitive. So maybe some of you are a little bit sensitive, but you're lacking in awareness. Could it be?
Yeah.
Huh?
And it seems not a way to evaluate, to say I made a mistake. Because there becomes like some kind of mindset about discrimination, like just hearing, sensing, and not say I made a mistake, which takes a judgment. I mean, I don't like my behavior then. It wasn't productive. It wasn't what I wanted. It was hurtful. Like it almost gets anti-judgment.
Oh, I hope so.
But how do you evaluate then to say, you know, I made a mistake or I want to move in this direction?
Well, there is no problem about... I mean, you don't stop moving if you drop your judgments. In fact, judgments are an awful lot of judgments stop you from moving. Because they're unwritten little codes going through the mind, you know, the music of the brain going around the elevator all the time. Oh, watch out, I don't want to do anything stupid. Oh, are they looking at me? Oh, better watch out over there. Oh, yeah, gosh, yes. Oh, don't start that. Now, don't drop that cup of tea. Here, you carry it. You're saying that somebody you know who is a Buddhist... They say, when you say to them, you really screwed up there, mate, they say, what?
It just happened, or this is.
Then you go up to them and you say, yeah, this is too. Here's your suitcase, Dad. This is. If somebody is using cause and effect as an excuse, then you just give them that excuse. Yeah, the cause and effect that you represent is a cause and effect I don't really want on my doorstep. Thank you very much. Oh, and take your suitcase, too. And cause and effect that one, sweetheart. Now, don't blame it on Buddhism. If somebody, you know, if somebody's an escape artist, they're an escape artist. Uh-huh. Has nothing to do with Buddhism. They could probably do this.
You can decide, though, you want something and you don't want something.
You always want something. But make the difference between I want something and if you really love me, you'd give it to me. See, I'll tell you a story about want something. I don't particularly like water very much, that swimming type. It's not really one of my favorite pastimes from past time. And that was corny, wasn't it? And I was in Peru. Do you know much about Peru? Peru is right up against mountains, even more than Perth. It's desert area. It's all desert area. And... That part along the coast, Lima, all the trees that grow in Lima are watered by hand. It's basically desert. So I was in Peru, and I had a couple of days. I had 4 or 5 days. For some reason, I decided I was going to go swimming. There are no swimming pools in Peru, in Lima. But I decided I'm going to go swimming. In fact, I wanted to go swimming. So I don't speak Spanish. And I was staying in a really cheap hotel. I didn't have a lot of money to go to the, you know, any, get a taxi and say, take me to a swimming pool or something. So I walked outside and I kind of think, well, I really want to go swimming. Well, okay. I went to a bus driver and I said, does this bus go near a swimming pool? He said, no. So I asked another one. He said, no, that one does. So I went over that one and asked him. He said, ah, yeah. So I got on the bus and I rode for about an hour and a half, that is to say, out of town. And then he stopped the bus and he said, okay, the swimming pool is another 2 miles up this road. So I said, thanks, and I walk up the road. And I come to this private club, members only. And I go in and I say, I understand you have a swimming pool. Oh, yes, she says. Ding. How many of you have seen Groundhog Day? Ding. Those of you who have not, you cannot awaken unless you see it. It's a prerequisite for awakening. So rent it, get a bunch of friends over, only those who like to laugh. It's good, isn't it? It's a fantastic movie. Was it boring the first time? Really? Oh, imagine how he felt. That's interesting. Thank you. So then, but still I wanted to go swimming. So the woman at the desk knew very well that I was not membership material and was making it quite plain to me. I, however, did not speak Spanish, so I could not understand. I just kept saying, what is it? Pizzeria, you say, for swimming pool, something like that? Is it like, something like that, isn't it? And I knew that much. And so this other man comes in, and he's a member, you can tell. And he says, buenos dias, señorita, whatever, you know. He spoke much better Spanish than I did. And he's saying, you know, any calls, blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying, yeah, but I really want to go swimming. And he looks at me, and he looks at her, and he says, oh, she's my guest, signs me in. So in Lima, Peru, I spent 4 hours in the afternoon all by myself in this Olympic-sized swimming pool, and then went out, walked the 2 miles back to the bus, and rode back. It was quite lovely. Because I wanted to. I didn't have any expectation. If I had not been able to get in, it was fine. I was just curious all the time. I don't even know why I wanted to. It was almost like that was something that rose in me to learn how to use discrimination. Something, you'd have to, how many of you have been to Lima? You don't know how unlikely this story is, finding a swimming pool in Lima. But there it was. So there is this kind of feeling that you have to kind of push or deserve. Well, I think that's a rumor. I think you already deserve. I think they push to be born, and I think you deserve to be a lover. And that means you're free to want and to have aspiration and then get on with your life and enjoy it. I don't think it's necessary to be unhappy or to be judging or to be caught. Nothing arises without cause. Understanding that frees you.
So you're saying you could move through the aspiration?
We all move through our aspiration. We certainly don't move through our worry. The worry is like this cloud, you know? Like, every once in a while you've got this worry, and every once in a while you stumble over your aspirations. Oh my God, it happened. Must have been because I was worrying, right? No. No, my friend, no. It happens because that's how you're made. You're a human being. You have the power to discriminate. And if you will act with love, that is to say, no position. In Buddhism, they say you have three bodies. There's the body body, the speech body, and the mind body. The body body has six sense doors: sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, brain. This brain, it works on data from the past. Okay? So you get information in, it feeds it into this sense door. It does a little, you've got a computer? It does a little word search. Comes up, says, oh yeah, Guatemalan shirt? See, it just does it. Yeah, thank you. You can praise my past. There are less praiseworthy things in my past, too. Yes, thank you. So then you say, Guatemalan shirt? And the other person says, oh, yeah, I got that. And you have this whole little dialogue. And it says, maybe there's one of those things that's got a little red sticker on it saying, danger, danger. And you say, yellow votes. Like, whatever. Okay? Then there's this body. It has three sense doors. Or the brain, or the access to this body is easiest through the throat. It has three sense doors: sight, sound, and mind. This is the body that's of all the energy around you, your emotions, your ability to feel risings and fallings, that sense of pressure, texture, and meditation, all that stuff. Huh? All that kind of expansion, feeling, contraction, when something feels right or doesn't feel right, it's this body. This body is where disease starts and can be healed quickest. It's linked to all your emotional states. Okay? It's also all the angels, all the devils, all that stuff. Here, this body. Three sense doors: sight, sound, and mind. What do angels do? What do angels do? Come on. Huh? What else? Huh? They sing? And play harps? Huh? They bring messages, yeah. So they've got this kind of singing radiance with messages. Right? Sight, sound, and mind. A different kind of mind. Slightly different kind of mind. A mind of messages, administration, radiance. Okay? Not the same time mind as this one. This one's time. What time is it? Well, am I in North America or am I in Australia? Have I passed the date line yet? A time, you know, handling the world is this one. Awareness of the interconnectedness, the cause and effect, that kind of, the radiant form of that, like the energy of motive, this mind. Okay? And this one, the key here that takes you into the third body, which has one sense door only, mind only, is totality kind of consciousness. It has two main attributes, you could say, like wave or particle sort of idea. You got that idea? One is cause and effect of all states and all beings. It will open out into understanding the cause and effect of all consciousness and all objects, all comings into beings and passings away. And the other is called shunya or anatta. It means no inherent self. So this one is totality, non-self, like a void nature, but not empty. Do you understand? Cause and effect with no identity. Is that clear? With no inherent self. This is self. This is temporal. This is eternal. This is the energy flowing between the two. Discrimination is when you're based in seeing cause and effect without grasping for a self to defend or perform. It's a state of love and not being misled. But you have to have this world with this one. totally love and totally know what you want. That's the tricky part. Huh? Yeah. How well you do it has a lot to do with this world, how your emotions are. Does that satisfy you? Other questions?
So, what's the basis of choice then? If you're not.
Isn't that a good one? That's a really good question. In my experience, the only choice you have is the only time you have choice is if you practice awareness. And if you practice awareness, then you have choice about your reaction.
But isn't choice also a creative act?
That's very creative. Sorry, my leash is calling. That's very creative. That's the most creative thing because your reaction creates the future.
So you're saying that choice is only a reaction, it's not in fact action?
Your reaction is the action that creates the future. Why do you decide to eat? The simplest possible reason will do. I was looking at my own heart here. So yes, that's exactly which reason would you like to hear here? No.
It's just a response.
And then what you decide to eat is also, sort of feel like having,
Yeah, choice.
There's a response too.
Yeah.
And then what you choose, that frames how you move your life. That action, how you respond, creates the next moment.
But if we stand on the edge of what I like to describe as chaos, because out of chaos comes order, which becomes the past, and we consciously endeavor to choose absolutely creative.
Yeah, you can do that, but the problem is that which is choosing, if you look really closely, is chaos. It's chaos choosing out of chaos. Just because some chaos has a little bit of light shining off of it. In the moment. Because there is a sense of a self. Do you believe that in your heart there is anything that is separate from the hearts of everyone else in the world?
Do I believe in my heart?
That in your heart there is anything that is separate from everyone else in the world?
Right.
I wonder. In my experience, human consciousness and indeed consciousness at one point is not separable. So whatever anybody does, I'm doing.
Experience.
It is the awareness of choosing either to ignore or not ignore. That's all. I think we only have one choice ever. Will I be a lover or not? In every moment, I don't think we have any other choice. I think we absolutely have that choice. But it's something that you have to make the choice in every moment, continuously. And you always get the evidence to make you decide whether you're going to try it or not. You know?
So it's acceptance.
I like that. Yeah, that's. Yeah, I think so. I think that's lovely. Thank you. Yeah. Other? Yes. To be a lover would mean that you believe that nothing arises without cause. Is it? Well, if you really believe that nothing arises without cause, then you realize that everything is as it should be. I think you do. I think you do if you look at it a bit. I think you do. If you realize that whatever arises is the only possibility that could have arisen at that moment, then you don't go, why did you do that? It's very clear. You did that because the cause is there, but you try to see how you could create cause for less suffering.
What is the cause of love?
I'm just not through here yet. Is that okay? And then there's another question there. Did you follow that?
Yeah, I understand the line of reasoning. I have a shallow line of reasoning coming up to
it. Touch it, please.
Well, when I was teaching philosophy, I was intrigued by Hume, who said, the English philosopher, who said there is no cause, there's only constant conjunction, and that bothered me for many years. So it takes me a bit to sort of agree with you.
Okay, so there's no capital C cause. There's no original cause. I'm on Hume's side for that. It's a waste of time looking for the original cause.
There's a contingent cause, perhaps.
But there is continuous cause and effect occurring. So if you question any one action, it arises with cause. That is to say, there are no mistakes in the universe.
Very hard, you know, if you see someone killing someone else, say if you're in a war, and you see someone and you think, well, I'm meeting this as a lover. I'm seeing this as a lover.
It is very hard. I never said it was easy to be a lover. Even smaller actions. Even the wars inside my own brain. You know, you don't have to postulate horrible things.
No.
You know?
That's an extreme example.
Yeah, don't postulate that. That doesn't serve anything. Just imagine your dog with fleas. Have you got a dog? Cat? No, okay, so don't do that either. Yeah. You don't have to postulate. You don't have to postulate the horrific. It's already present somewhere. Look at it where it is, and then watch yourself and make the best choices you can. See, to be a lover doesn't have judgment. It just says you're making the best choices you can. So when you don't live up to your ideals, you're still a lover. I hope so, yeah. In Buddhism, they call it loving kindness. Does that satisfy you?
Yes.
And your question?
How does aspiration work?
How does it work? Could you say a little more about that?
Choice, I think. You know, how do we sort of move through life? Choosing something with the mind because it's reasonable and it fits this, but somehow it doesn't feel right. I'm just wondering if cause and effect, where's the right sort of thing? How's that discrimination?
See, if you follow my hypothesis, then whatever path you take is the right path. You see? So that's really difficult because we have this sense of fear that we're going to take the wrong path. The only time you're really going to take the wrong path is if you swoon out, if you don't pay attention. And if you really insist on not paying attention, Eventually life will get your attention. Now that eventually is worth discussing. And that's why you have something like Buddhism, Christianity, different religious paths. Because they're talking about that eventually. How not to suffer so long. So you have kind of a moral code or things like that passed down. Why? Because they work. They work for less suffering. That's what they work for. So that you have a better chance to learn.
I have no idea that everyone has a role in the world, a path to play, something to bring forward into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, myself, it's been hard to recognize which, it seems to me there's been many possibilities for me to choose from. It's always been a mind game trying to.
Maybe you have the role of being indecisive. And so try congratulating yourself on that. No, I'm not. I'm really not joking. I know it sounds like I am, but I'm not. You know? Like, what you need to do is recognize what you do do. And it sounds so flippant. But I wonder if you could try it. Because it's not flippant. It is always the thing we most underrate that becomes the most precious to us. Especially if you're a perfectionist, eh? You know what I mean? One or two people here know what I mean? It's that aspect of yourself that you underrate that has the greatest gift for you. So you state it and it's negative, and then you look at it from its other side. Or also Western mysteries, the devil is God as he appears to the ignorant. Isn't that lovely? Do you understand that? The devil is God as he appears to the ignorant. It's pretty beautiful. My question over there, left. Do you have any other? Yes? I'm sorry? Oh, karma?
Yeah. I keep seeing karma as a form of judgment.
No. Yeah, karma only means one thing. It means activity. And then the result of karma is called karma vipaka, which means the result of action. And everything we are right now in this room is our karma vipaka. And everything we are doing is our karma. So every time you blink or swallow or shift your position or understand or don't understand or feel it's too hot or too cold, that's your karma. The vipaka is your eyes don't dry out when you blink. When you shift around, you don't get that funny little pain in your backside. That's your karma vipaka. You got it? You understand what I'm saying? Now, people use the term. You know, so I went to a party not long ago, a potluck party. I got there, my friend arrived, she had her arm in a cast. I said, "What happened?" She said, "I broke my arm." Somebody else said, "Oh, that must have been your karma." Is that what you're talking about? Well, it is. That person is like somebody saying, "Well, I'm saved and you're damned." Ha 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 ha. No. No, nowhere. No. Nothing is predetermined like that. No. The only thing that is predetermined is that we're all lovers. And it's just a matter of how long we can pretend we're not. Have you ever told a lie? Yeah. When can you remember one time when you told a lie, one particular time? Remember one time. Sorry? You can't remember. Okay, thank you. Have you ever wished that somebody would get out of your way, or been angry about something? And what is the feeling of that? Is it a pleasant feeling? So the action is hatred, and the result is a wall. Now that wall is there. Is that a judgment, or is that the way things work? If you judge yourself to be bad, therefore I am always bad, that's judgment. That's, excuse me, a pile of crap. But if you notice, oh, there's a wall from anger, I wonder what would happen if I dissolve that wall by not being angry. Then that's the result of that action, is not being caught in that anger. Is that very clear? That's all there is, my friend. That's all you got. See, whether I believe it or not doesn't have any influence on you. Does it?
Well, I'm talking for an understanding of myself.
Okay. Okay. No, you do not, you are not born with something absolutely fated to happen to you. No. But if you are born female, there is a propensity that you will bear a child. You have that propensity. Do you understand that? So that propensity is there. If you're born a female dog, you have a propensity for multiple births. Is that clear? If you're a human female, the propensity is for one child. That's clear? Those propensities are there, and it is a certain type of desire motive will create a human body as opposed to a pigeon's body or an angelic body. There are causes that create the body, and the body does have propensities of activity. Okay? But they're not, you have talents, but you're not sentenced. Does that help you? Okay. Yes. By remembering that we're all capable of it. That's the number one way. And the most lousy deed that any human being could accomplish anywhere, which is probably happening in my very own neighborhood, is also possible in seed form in this heart. So don't demonize. The only way those sins are ever perpetrated is through demonizing. You have to split off subject, object, I'm saved, you're damned. Everything is possible then. What people do for the good of others often wouldn't bear close examination, would it? Does that satisfy you? Okay. Yes. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Silence? Do you? Is it lonely? Safety, but also dullness. Yeah. Then use your aspiration. Make a prayer every day that you find a way to bridge with safety. And then practice an exercise called the Six Givings. Do you know that exercise? 6 times a day you have to give something. Only 2 of them can be material. The other 4 can be whatever you want. The difference is that just before you give each one of these, you have to name what you're going to give. Now, for example, one of my favorites is, okay, I'm going to give my next out-breath to that plant. Then I breathe in, and I watch my out-breath go, and I image it going to that plant. That's one. I'm going to give a minute of feeling the pressure of all my weight on my left foot. I'm going to give you the most honest answer I can. Giving is a great bridge. When I do the givings, I watch each one. Then when I go to bed at night, I review the 6. Now let me see, I gave an out-breath to the plant, I gave all my weight to my left foot. God, I got to go on a diet soon. You see? You just go through the list, you review it before you go to sleep. It's a wonderful exercise. How many of you did that practice? I gave it before. What did you find from it?
Gorgeous.
She tells the truth. Would you like to elaborate on gorgeous? Do you hear this? Who else? Did you do it? Yeah. What did you find?
Much greater awareness in giving.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what was that like? What was the energy of that?
Very joyful.
I didn't pay any of these people. They didn't know I was going to ask this tonight. Mm-hmm. Who else did it? Who else? Yes?
Contact.
Yeah.
There's something else that happens. It's really fascinating. In the act of awareness, I became aware of much, much more.
Yes. It's a beautiful exercise. You're right. It is gorgeous. It is exactly. So I offer that to you. Give it a good try and see what happens. Is that an adequate sufficiency for this evening? I know I usually talk for an hour and a half, but I'm feeling just on the edge of flu-ish, so I'm going to cut out here tonight. Is that all right? Okay. And so, no, please. No, just leave me your shirt. No. I don't know. I think I would just like to tell you one more thing. There is only one real requirement for being able to practice discrimination at all times. But I don't know how many of you are ready to receive that teaching. You make it very hard for me. But I suppose if one or two of you are interested, then you can stay. And this is called the Polish Mudra. I don't know how many of you are aware of this teaching. But it's a very high teaching. It has to be given through a Polish lineage. Fortunately, my father was from Poland. Excuse me. It's a serious, serious teaching here. So those of you who don't want to receive the Polish mudra, you can just leave the room. Okay, the rest of you now, if you're ready to receive this very holy and precious, this is extremely helpful for discrimination. You need to use this a lot. You always say every mantra 100,000 times. This one I would suggest 1,000,000 times a week. And like the giving exercise is gorgeous, this will do even more. It will increase your sense of spontaneity and joy 100%. Are you ready? It's very short, very quick to pass it on. I don't need to channel or anything. I'll just do it straight. Pulling on my Polish heritage here. It comes in two parts. Are you all prepared? Your spines are straight. Get yourselves in a nice spiritual position for this one. Are you ready? Keep your eyes open because that's very spiritual. Okay, now the first part of it is sort of like rolling the top of your spine by pulling your shoulders up to your ear level and letting your head drop a bit forward like that. And then you roll back. You got that? Once more. Like that. And then back. Now the mantra that accomplishes this, it goes like this. Are you ready? Now you say this after me while you're doing the movement. I don't know. And then down again. Now please, I know it's very joyful to receive this. But please, this is just the first part. So now please, all together now. I don't know. And then let your shoulders down. Some of you are still far too joyful. Please control it. I will do it one more time. I don't know. That's excellent. Now the second part is very, very important. And you use your right hand. You have to use your right hand. And sort of this part of the palm. And you go like this. Are you watching? Got that? So the whole mudra is like this. I know it's very joyful, but please, no hysteria. We control our joy in the spiritual path. Are you ready? I don't know. All right, I deem that you are worthy, and I promise you, if you would do this a million times this week... Particularly if you're asked a question for which it's appropriate from some very, very real authority figure in your life. You might want to pause a bit between Act 1 and Act 2 because he or she may not be ready for the power of this mudra. So you might want to go, more so, oh. There's a certain mystery is allowed with it. You don't have to do the full... It's really good for the vertebrae back here. Stimulates the rising of the kundalini. Okay. So then you can feel that gold light in your heart and the energy of joy through your body, spreading out through your body, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Wherever there is suffering, caused by ignorance of body, speech, or mind. This is temporarily assuaged by this gold light that spreads from us. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you very much. Thank you. Don't forget, a million Polish mudras.